If you negotiate with your knee before standing up, you're losing that argument. Joint Relief Institute treats joint pain fast. And yes, it's covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000 as in zero pain.
Today is Friday. It's December 18th, 2015. This is The Mincing Rascals. I'm John Williams with Eric Zorn, a columnist for the Chicago Tribune. Hello, Eric Zorn.
Hey, John.
Krista McQuarrie is here, columnist and editorial writer for the Chicago Tribune.
Hi, John.
And we're joined once again by Scott Stantis, the editorial cartoonist for said newspaper. Hello, sir.
Hey, John. We almost have quorum here for the editorial page.
We do.
Oh, is that how you guys... How does that work?
We meet twice a week. We come up with ideas that we want to write about. We debate. We kick them around. Sometimes we get in fist fights. And then we produce something.
Is it a majority rules?
why do you laugh?
Sure, let's go with that.
Sometimes it is, but the editorial page editor, it's, you know, basically his page.
Is that Bruce Dold?
It is Bruce Dold. Mm-hmm.
I know Bruce Dold. I used to live down the street from him. So if there were a debate, he would say, okay, I know, that's pro, that's con. Somebody's got to make a decision, and it's his decision.
It's his decision. And
but it's often, I mean, I'm not on the board. I sit in these meetings, but they're often.
How do you get in?
They're sort of, you know what? They don't know that I'm not on the board. But what happens is that there's an opinion, and they sort of look to what the paper has said before. And they sort of, it's got a Supreme Court quality in that way, where they try to figure out, okay, well, we said this, so if we're going to change our mind, we have to have a good reason to change our mind. And then it is Bruce's page, but he often synthesizes the opinions around the room. Like, he may come in like thinking, well, we're for this, but then there will be nuances added. The conversations are really interesting.
I assume he has to then say, okay, well, we're going to endorse Mayor Emanuel. And then does he assign somebody to write that endorsement? And would it ever be somebody who is now writing the position of the paper and that's not their personal belief? Does that ever happen?
Rarely. You generally bring an idea to the table that you want to write about, and he would never force someone to write something that wasn't, you know, that was really contrary to what they believe. Do we sometimes write editorials that, you know, I'm not particularly passionate about? Sure. But he's careful to pick and choose, subjects.
Well, what has the Tribune said per se? I mean, the three of you are on the editorial side, more or less, about the GOP slate. I mean, we talk so much about Donald Trump, but does the newspaper say they're doing well? I noticed in the last debate, Reince Priebus, or as Ben Carson calls him, Mr. Pubis.
Pubis.
Yeah, I like that.
Is that intentional? Freudian?
Yeah, I don't know what that was. It's hard to know with him. But he was really rallying the troops. You know, he was really flying the flag for the Republican Party. And when I looked at that, I thought, I wonder if they're proud of this assemblage of candidates and the way it's been comporting itself.
I can say before this all started, you looked at this lineup and it was a very deep bench. It really was. You had some very smart, capable governors, senators.
You can't think of 15 Democrats that could command a national stage, right?
No. So these guys step up and then all of a sudden Trump announces and sucks all the air out of the room. One of the most interesting conversations I think we're having on the editorial board and I'm having with my other conservative friends is if it is Donald Trump, if this holds up and the polls are right and he is the nominee for the Republican Party, could you support him? And the answers have been fascinating.
Why?
Because generally it's no.
Well, of course not. Of course
but
not.
But who else are you going to vote for? Hillary? That's not going to happen. So do you not vote? Do you vote for the Libertarian? What do you do?
I think that's an interesting conversation. And I don't know how Kristen feels about this today, because last week she famously went to the dark side. But he won't be the nominee. So it's an interesting conversation, but it's not.
You're going to owe me lunch.
Let's be clear. Kristen didn't endorse Trump. She just said, as I think is becoming more and more clear, that it looks like Trump's going to be the nominee. I don't think she didn't sign on with the campaign.
I'm not a Trump supporter. But
I know that.
But I'm coming to terms with the fact that he is still so far. I mean, the lead is just almost unsurmountable at this point.
In the debate, Jeb Bush finally swung and landed a punch.
Yeah, finally.
When he said, you will not insult your way to the presidency. And that was the loudest applause line of the night. And Jeb's not going to win the nomination either, maybe. But I just thought, too many people see him for what he is. He won't be the nominee. And the party has to do something to forestall that, because he won't be the president. They will nominate. You know, you didn't know if Mitt Romney was going to win or not. You didn't know if John McCain was going to win or not. You know Donald Trump's not going to win.
I'm not convinced of that.
Win the presidency or win the nomination?
Win the presidency. So as a party, you cannot nominate him. I guess you can, but you might as well nominate Donald Duck. He won't win the presidency.
I'm not convinced of that. I got to tell you, and I hate to say that out loud.
I think that is such a sad assessment of the American people.
It is.
Think that is sad.
It is. They know him. They've known him for a decade now on television. He's been in their living rooms, and I think that's what's driving this nomination. It's bizarre, but I think he can be the nominee, and I think he can win.
I think he can be the nominee. I don't think the demographics support him winning. This country is largely has a huge growing minority base. The Republican Party just is so terrible about trying to bring Hispanic voters on board. I just don't think the demographics are there for Donald Trump to win. And one of our fellow board members said, she's an African-American woman. She is our commentary page editor. And she said, ain't enough white people in this country to elect Donald Trump. And in terms of demographics and the way that, you know, the minority vote is so loyal to Democratic nominees, I don't think it's
possible. Right, but they're not going to be energized by Hillary Clinton candidacy. That's not good. That's also another thing.
Yeah, but
thing.
Then
it's
they'll
not
just go away. But then they won't vote.
They won't vote. Couple that with what flyover country, let's call it, you know, disparagingly call it that, and they come out and they're going to vote in large numbers for this guy. I can see it happening. I don't want it to happen. I hope he's not the nominee.
Minute. Who's going to vote for him in flyover country? Describe those people for me.
I'm going to say average schmoes who watch reality TV, who made reality TV what it is today.
It's going to be working class people who are angry about the fact that that middle income earners have been stagnant in this country for a long time. It's going to be people who are really afraid of terrorism, who are really afraid that gun rights are going away, who are people who are sympathetic to the Republican Party stance on abortion. It's going to be a coalition of people who are like that, I think.
You could tell in the debate who the candidates themselves thought was going to matter. It's going to be Cruz and Rubio, because Cruz and Rubio fought famously with each other in this debate. Neither of them took the time to go after Trump. I think because Cruz and Trump have a secret pact, I really do. I don't know that he would ask him to be vice president, but for some reason, they're way too pally for me. I don't exactly understand that. But Marco Rubio has decidedly ignored Donald Trump in that debate. But he made a point to go after Cruz and Cruz Rubio, because they know that's where the real battle is going to be.
Cruz is playing the long game. Cruz thinks, just as John Williams does, that Trump's support is going to crater at some point, and that these angry people, these disaffected people, are going to go for the next best conservative, the next most strident conservative.
Don't you think that's a smart strategy?
Oh, yeah. No, I think it probably is.
I still think it's Rubio.
Pulling ahead in Iowa, Cruz is. I don't know how much we care about caucuses.
Now, you just touched on something. Yeah. And in fact, Trump said something interesting during or after the debate where he says, well, it's just Iowa. And Iowa's a different can of worms than, say, New Hampshire or South Carolina, any other primary states, because it's a caucus state. So you have to have boots on the ground. Get the churches, get, you know, grandma and the senior center to the caucuses to vote for you. Cruz has that. He also has the appeal to the evangelicals. I mean, look what Iowa has given us from the Republican Party. What, the last 10 elections? It's given us Santorum. It's given us Robertson. It's given us Huckabee. It's given us all the guys who never came close to the nomination. So Cruz, I think, has a good shot at Iowa. I do. You may be right there.
Fiorina so impresses me when she talks. I don't know how you go from running a business to running.
She's awful, John.
Oh, I think she's John.
I think she's smart. I think she's articulate.
You know those generals?
I think she's poised.
She ticked off all those generals that she said had disagreed with Obama and left the military. One of them had left the military in 2003. I mean,
you're telling me
they knew what was coming.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I find her very unimpressive. I find her shrill and patronizing.
Ooh.
You wouldn't do that if she was
be
a guy.
Careful, right?
I don't find Hillary Clinton shrill.
Oh. Goodness.
I'm just going to say
this is
quietly.
Long silence. No, but I it's interesting how much Hillary and Bernie Sanders aren't even a part of the conversation. The national dialogue.
That's true. That's
right. Going to happen. All of the ugliness, all of the sexism, all of the history, all files and phone records of Hillary, that's all going to be a smashing conversation in 2016. But it's not right now because we can't take our eye off that shiny object. And we don't have to talk
about it.
The
Democrats have
now.
A debate this weekend, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're burying it again, so you don't have to see it.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even watched any of these Democratic
debates.
They
should debates. Get Trump to
seem,
come on
they
their
don't
debate.
Seem particularly relevant.
They well, should.
I know.
He should moderate it.
Would it
that
ever
would be
work
a good idea.
If,
wouldn't it?
Would a Democrat ever ask a moderate Republican to serve as a running mate?
It's
would,
happened before. Not something similar to
well,
that.
Well, they almost who was it? Lincoln.
Well,
somebody didn't Bush almost.
There was Abraham Lincoln.
Didn't they almost ask Lieberman to run? Didn't was it Bush
right.
almost
no,
asked
no,
Lieberman?
No, McCain.
McCain almost asked Lieberman.
McCain in 04.
I'm just thinking so. Maybe that's a way for one of them to get traction on the other side.
Don't forget, Lincoln ran with Andrew Johnson.
I didn't know that either.
He was
I
a Democrat.
I don't care. Okay, so that's that is the GOP assessment. Eric and Kristen and Scott are much more open to the notion that Donald Trump is going to carry the day as a nominee for the Republican Party as of this almost the last week of December
well,
2015.
We've been talking all along about the fact that Rubio looks like the guy who's got the position to move up on the field and pass people when they all stumble, right? That he's young, he's well-spoken, he's fairly charismatic. He's in that field, he's somewhat moderate. I mean, it's a very conservative field.
Can I tell you? Go ahead, Eric.
So that he may be in a position to be the. I would bet if you were to give the Hillary camp some sodium pentothal, they would tell you the candidate they're most afraid of is Rubio.
I suspect that's true.
And so if Republicans kind of wake up to that and go, well, you know what? If we want to beat Hillary Clinton rather than just beat our breasts, we're going to want to nominate.
Breasts or chests? Or both?
Either is correct. Boy, everything I'm saying is getting questioned here for
well,
seconds.
Well, let's talk about something else. So you brought this up to me off the air outside this podcast, Eric, and that is what's been happening at Wheaton College. Wheaton College, interestingly, came into the news after the president of Liberty University, Jerry Falwell Jr., a couple of weeks ago, told the student body that they all ought to pack heat and that if there's any radical Muslims out there, come to this campus and we'll show you how it's done. And the students cheered. And it was the most unchristian thing I've ever seen. And there at this Christian university that's building champions for Christ, he said that. Bring the guns. We'll take care of these Muslims. He said these Muslims, not these radical Muslims. And maybe that's implied, but he didn't say it. And besides, that sort of hate speech is the sort of thing that really empowers hateful and crazy people to do ridiculous things. Then the students at Wheaton College issued a statement after that. And they said, that's not a Christian response. And here's how we feel about being all-encompassing. So I'm like, go Wheaton. Then a Muslim professor at Wheaton College wears her...
No. She's Christian.
Oh, she's a Christian,
she's Christian.
Professor.
She yeah. just wore a headscarf as a show of solidarity with Muslims and posted something. Was it on her Facebook page?
That's, yes, it was.
Yeah, Facebook.
Saying that, you know, we pray to the same God, basically.
She and, said, if
yeah,
I may,
go ahead, please.
I stand in religious solidarity with Muslims because they, like me, a Christian, you're right, are people of the book. And as Pope Francis stated last week, we worship the same God. Wheaton College then in a statement said, while Islam and Christianity are both monotheistic, we believe there are fundamental differences between the two faiths, including what they teach about God's revelation to humanity, the nature of God, the path to salvation, and the life of prayer. And so they said, oh, huh, we don't believe that we all pray to the same God. They want to have that argument? I can't believe that's a debate.
They suspended her.
I know they
suspended
did.
Her.
And so now, if I understand where the story is today, she's issued a statement saying that she's going to, if I may, quote from the Chicago Tribune again.
Always a good idea.
Please.
I am committed to engaging in dialogue with appropriate colleagues at Wheaton toward the goal of reaching reconciliation so that I may continue to live out my vocation as a Christian scholar. She's going to go back to grading student papers, she said in a statement. So she's trying to walk that thing back. What are they doing? Why would you ask her to... Don't we all pray to the same God, but we use different vehicles, our own religion?
Well, certainly the God of Abraham, which is the core for Judaism, which of course Christ sort of was. And so she had a salient point above everything else of just saying, hey, listen, we need to get along here. And that seems to be a very Christian view, not we need to shoot each other.
Or liberal view. I mean, really, nobody knows if there's a God and you think there's more than one God? If you believe in God at all, don't you believe in God? And don't you accept that Jews and Hindus and Muslims and Christians all kind of prey and it's all going up into the sky and
not
somebody's
at Wheaton. Not at Wheaton. No, really. I mean, this is a debate we had on the board, and part of the debate was, you know, when you sign up to teach at Wheaton College, it is a very strict evangelical Christian school, and it's a private university. So that does restrict your, you know, First Amendment or religious freedom rights to say whatever you want to say.
Well, they'll fire you if you say you're gay. Even if you post that you're gay on your Facebook page, that's a fireable offense there.
So, this, you know, I come down on the side of the college has a right to punish her because they are a private university. It's in their code when you sign up as an employee, kind of this code of ethics, what you can and cannot do.
And believe, and
that's what you sign up for. On the other hand, I just think it tramples on academic freedom and growth and opportunity that colleges should be fostering. So they can do it. I think it was a short-sighted move.
Yeah, if I'm on their board of directors, I say, look, I understand this theological problem they have. I can see calling her in, saying, you know, look, we saw this on your Facebook post. Let's be clear about this. Let's not, you know, and maybe ask her to do another post, clarifying what she said, or walking it back, as you say. But I would not have made a big issue out of this. I think it makes them look small-minded. It makes them look obtuse and not really. It's not an academic nothing that's worthy of an academic institution. As you know, someone who comments on for the public, as the editorial board does, and I do, it isn't our business in some ways. It's like, hey, it's a private college and they're doing this, and hey, I wouldn't do it if I were running the place, but they did it, so
they get to make their own rules and play by their own rules.
Can I throw something out here also? And these actually are connected. Wheaton College is in DuPage County, of course. College of DuPage is, of course, in DuPage County and mired in its scandals and everything. What the hell is wrong with DuPage County? Seriously, not go to college there.
Oh, no, there's some good places. North Central's out there. Elmer's College is out there. Let's not lump them all together.
There's something in the water.
There is. Really not to mention. And College of DuPage is, I believe, the largest community college in the country.
Oh, it's massive.
It's as big as some four-year schools.
And they just lost the president of the board. She ascended after all the scandals and got in the clean slate, won the election, and then last week she inexplicably, and I still don't know. Do you know any inside information?
Something will come out. I mean, their accreditation is now in trouble.
She resigned for personal reasons. Mm-hmm. And in fact, a friend of mine who works with her politically, and she was a star. I mean, you're looking at someone who could have, I think, potentially been an enormous star in the Republican Party in Illinois, such as it is. And he was stunned by it. He had no idea. That this was happening, and so, yeah, that story is going to continue. Yeah, they're on, 2 years probation now,
right? And a lot of that precedes her time on the board. But I don't know. I mean, maybe she was just exhausted. That's what kind of she has implied.
Maybe she really wanted to spend more time with her family.
Yeah, I know.
First person ever to actually resign for that reason. Who knows?
Well, let's just stay in that neighborhood for a second. Go to Naperville, the high school where the students were told, actually the administration, the coach was told, you can't pray as a team before football games. And they said, okay, we won't. This Freedom From Religion Foundation in Madison, Wisconsin, saw a photo of them. They called them on it. They said, yeah, we shouldn't be praying. We're a public institution. The students, obviously late this year, have said that, well, we're going to pray next season, and you can all come and watch us. And I think that's as it should be. I don't mind the administration backing off. They should. And I don't mind the students rebelling and saying we're going to pray if we want to.
I had an interesting question. What the argument was that the coach was leading the prayer. So it's a separation of church and state. And, yeah, you can make a case there. If the kids start the prayer, if they lead the prayer, can the coach join in?
I wouldn't. I think that looks like an endorsement. Who cares? I mean, if I'm the coach, just walk away from that and let the kids go pray.
Well, and I have a difficult time getting exercised over something that is really and I don't care who you're praying to, taking a moment of silence, help us in our game. We don't know if he actually invoked the Lord, but just taking a moment to bond with your teammates. I have such difficulty getting all riled up that this is, you know, an infringement on the U.S. Constitution.
Plus, if you watch sport, clearly Jesus cares about football. I'm from
the
South.
Go to Texas.
He cares a lot.
Go to Texas. I'm pretty sure there is prayer before, during, and after every game at public high schools.
Well, I came up here from Alabama. You betcha.
Yeah, but I mean, but that is something to get exercised about. If you weren't a Christian and you were in one of those Southern high schools or colleges, I could see how you would feel a little put off by everybody praying and it part of the team deal. I mean, imagine as a Christian, if you are Catholic, Scott, if after and before and during every game you all, I don't know, prayed to Allah or did something Jewish that was not in your wheelhouse.
Well, I would also say the colleges handing out free condoms would be offensive to some people, but damn it, life is offensive sometimes.
Okay.
I mean, it seems to me to be a smart thing to try to keep that,
yes,
keep that separation.
I agree with
existing,
that, though.
Because it avoids all these kind of questions. If the kids really want to get together in a huddle and pray before the game, that's fine. I think the coaches should absent themselves from that for obvious reasons, that it could become coercive, and you just don't want that. I always wonder when I see these stories, like, was it – it's like, I think it's Matthew 6 maybe, where Jesus says, you know, don't pray in public like the hypocrites who want to be seen praying. Pray in private. It always seems to me there's something a little ostentatious at some of these events where people decided we're going to pray, we're going to
and this idea.
Oh goodness!
Well, and these
ideas,
these students like come out next year and watch us pray. Now, tell me that's not ostentatious. Tell me that's not trying to send a, you know, give the finger.
There
to
is
the people.
Nothing ostentatious about prayer.
Well, then explain what does that verse in the Bible mean then? What does this mean? What does it mean?
It also goes on to say when you're fasting, don't show that you're fasting, shave, bathe. Stuff like that.
This isn't Leviticus. I mean,
it's the same. It's the same quote. He says, "Don't show."
No, but I think they're using
faith.
Prayer as a weapon there or a tool.
Yes.
They're saying, "Okay, watch this."
Yeah, watch this.
Prayer should be, folks.
I think they're expressing their right to have some religious freedom, and that is in the Constitution. And so
I accept that, but I wonder when I see that, I think like people are using prayer like this is as an ostentation, as a display.
You know what it is, to separate themselves, to send a message.
But God knows.
We're pointing fingers around here.
No, you know what it is? It's in the South. Like I said, I lived in Alabama for 13 years, and it's when they say something horrible about that Kristen, she's just a knuckle dragon beast of a woman. Bless her heart.
Well, last thing about this. So at the GOP debate at the debate in Las Vegas, where they all gave their opening statements. Dr. Ben Carson, said, thank you. Do you do it, Ben Carson?
You've got your little mouth hands in front of you.
Close your eyes, and then talk like this. And
that's good.
Wow,
that just happened. And Carson said in his opening remark, his first words were, first, I just want us all to pause for a moment of silence for the survivors of San Bernardino." And then he puts his head down. And I thought, really?
He's taking a nap.
Really? I mean, you talk about ostentatious prayer.
Yeah.
Talk about using that as a lever. I don't think that was a sincere thing. It was really calculated, and I thought it failed.
And prayer theater, yeah.
I'm not a big fan.
I disagree. Okay. I agree with McCreary on this one. It's not ostentatious.
Kristen, high five to Scott Stantis. We close our podcast each week with our recommendations for something that you are seeing, watching, or listening to. And I suggested to the panel this week that we all focus on a Christmas movie because I love Christmas movies. And I actually think a lot about my top five.
Oh my goodness. Ahead.
Go.
The floor is yours.
You're going to give all five.
I'll concede my time to John Williams.
If you have five, I'll bet you name all of them that we can think of.
Well, that's
I don't know if you name five.
You're
Christmas
not even
movies.
An American if Christmas Vacation isn't on your list. And then you have to have White Christmas because that's who we are as a people. And then it gets a little vague. If I want to fight with people, I put, as I have right now, The Grinch Who Stole Christmas with Jim Carrey is on my list.
Oh.
And that's usually what I get from that one. But the one that I have decided to put back on my list is Love Actually. I watched that again the other day, and Love Actually is so, so, so good. In fact, the other podcast that I subscribe to, here's a shout out to just one of the podcasts, and that's Anytime Minutes. Devoted its entire podcast this week to that movie because it's just so awesome. So there's four of my five this week. Okay.
Great.
Kristen.
I really think Jim Carrey should have been Oscar nominated for The Grinch. He is so great.
Are you
in
making
that movie.
Fun of me?
No.
You teasing me on this?
I love that movie.
Oh, good.
I love
glad.
That movie.
Kindred
I think
spirits.
I think it's one of his I think he really shows his talent. He's so good. And to think every day he was getting all covered in grief. I mean, that's really a lot to ask for an actor. So I have to throw in A Christmas Story because I love when the leg lamp shows up and he's looking at the box and saying, Fragile. And then says, you know, he opens it up and it's a major award. And it's a stocking.
It's a major award. Did you see the musical of The Christmas Story?
I have not, no.
You will enjoy that.
Okay. Is it good?
It's a good scene. It's a good song. It's a good show. Yeah. How about you, Eric?
That would be mine also, Christmas Story. It's the only one that I think bears repeated watching. We watch it every couple of years at our place. We have the DVD. We don't have very many movies on DVD because we don't really believe in
watching movies. We have the DVD too, but we don't have a DVD player anymore, which is problematic.
But you know, I think it's a fabulous story, and it's funny, it's touching. It's also, I mean, I always remember the scene in the Chinese restaurant. They have to go to a Chinese restaurant.
It's
smiling.
They chop off the head.
And I'll be Christmas Story geeks quoting lines from it. But it's a pleasure to watch over and over again. So yeah, it's funny, but it does get to the heart of Christmas, so it's touching too. So
okay, Mr. Stannis,
why do you want the terrorists to win? Christmas Story has overtaken in a recent survey the now number two favorite Christmas film, which is It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
And I am still
goopy,
soppy mess at the end of it every stinking time.
Yeah. It's a Wonderful Life, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. The bell and his friends.
It's such a dark, hard movie, but it so saves itself at the end.
Yeah.
That scene coming in the living room there or in the stairwell and when the family's all gathered around.
And the friends are dumping their pockets of their cash on the table. Oh, God, they're going to get me going again.
Do you need a tissue?
All right. Any other recommendations from you, Mr. Stantis?
Yes, I am actually, if I may, shamelessly promote myself. I'm guest hosting Nick DiGilio's show from 2 to 5 a.m. It's on the Monday schedule, but it's actually Tuesday morning. So Tuesday, 2 to 5 a.m., I have no idea how it's going to go. It's going to be a lot of fun, and 2 to 5 a.m. is going to be a great slot.
So Monday night.
I'm going to stay up for that.
If you are listening to this
podcast, I'll be calling you at home.
Before Monday, December 21st at midnight, make sure you tune that in. That's Scott Stantis.
And we may actually podcast it anyway. So
cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming in, Scott.
Thanks for having me.
Christy McQuarrie, the editorial writer and columnist. You can see all of these people at chicagotribune.com/Zorn in your case, right, Eric Zorn?
That's right, /Zorn. That's what they say.
You can follow me on Facebook. I'm King John there. That's Bob Ferguson, our engineer, and Michael Heidemann helps coordinate and produce the Mincing Rascals.
You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you! You little rascal, you!